Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. So please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
I waited till I saw the sun. I don't know why I didn't come. I left you by the house of fun. Don't know why I didn't come.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Many people didn't know why a once unknown singer named Nora Jones became a runaway smash with her 2002 breakout record, Come Away With Me. Sure, it was pleasant listening, but 20 million sales and 8 Grammys? Well, a company called Platinum Blue Music Intelligence knew that it could be very big, thanks to a computer program that analyzes songs for their hit potential. Platinum Blue is now being used by major music companies to determine many of the songs that you hear on the radio today. Joining us on the phone, actually from Barcelona, Spain, to explain how it all works, is Platinum Blue's CEO, Mike McCready. Mike, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thank you.
So songwriters generally have, you know, in the business, there's like a 20% success rate for predicting hits, people who get paid to do this sort of thing. Your technology promises a hit rate of 80%. If I give you a CD before it's released, you can tell me exactly which songs, if any, will be hits?
Well, not our information alone. We use a technology called Music X-Ray to analyze underlying mathematical patterns in music. Now, we've discovered that hits tend to conform to a limited number of mathematical patterns. Additionally, the songs have to sound and feel like hit songs and be promoted like hit songs, and of course, neither of those depend on what our software says.
Mm-hmm.
But given that those two things are true, the song sounds and feels like a hit, and it's going to be promoted with best practice tactics or
So to take the Nora Jones example, Mike, Blue Note Records came to you with this album and said, run this through the software and tell us what you find?
No, actually, the Nora Jones instance occurred several years ago at a former company where we were using similar technology to this. This is Platinum Blue has only been in existence since late last year. But in practice, what happens is the major labels, large independents, even producers, when they're still in the studio with an artist, will contact us, send us their music, we analyze it, get a report back to them that gives them some key information about their music and their market that they couldn't see before they had this technology.
All right. Now, what are some of the, tell us a little bit about how it works. What are you looking for? What is the software looking for specifically in a song that says this has hit potential?
Well, the technology does something called advanced spectral deconvolution. That's just a fancy way of saying that it can break down a song into its various components: the melody, harmony, beat, tempo, rhythm, octave, pitch, chord progression, fullness of sound, etc. There are about 30 of these. And we look at the different combinations, and as they come together, of course, common sense might tell you that melody and beat are the most important elements in a song. But how much more important is one than the other, and when does chord progression and cadence start coming to factor in? And it's when you have a confluence, an optimal confluence of these patterns in each one of these elements that would say is somehow stimulating the pleasure centers of the brain. We keep coming back again and again to these same patterns.
So you've found by accruing a database of enough hit songs, you've found certain patterns in these 30 or so different algorithms or whatever they are that you can kind of predict what songs follow them.
That's correct.
Okay. We're speaking with Mike McCready. He's the CEO of Platinum Blue Music Intelligence. And Mike, I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but what does all of this say about us as listeners. I mean, we think that we're making a choice when we decide that we like a song. It almost sounds like it's, you know, response to chemical stimuli.
You know, that's true. It does sound that way. In actuality, we would say that the human ear probably hasn't evolved a lot since the time of Beethoven, which is about as far back as we can go to measure these sorts of things. A beautiful melody that Beethoven wrote still sounds beautiful to us today. A series of random notes to him still sound random to us today. So as you bring not just melody but the other components into the equation, you see that what has changed are the instruments we use, the styles we use, the kinds of interpretations we employ, but we keep coming back to these same 60 or so mathematical patterns over and over again, just in new and innovative sounds.
All right. Now, you guys predicted the success of the song Crazy by Gnarls Barkley.
That's right.
Let's listen to a little bit of this, and then to a little bit of Beethoven, and, you know, well, let's see what happens. All right, so Gnarls Barkley and their big hit from this year called Crazy, and then Beethoven and a big hit from the early 19th century, his Symphony No. 7. Mike McCready, two completely different genres of music, two completely different sound worlds. They come from very different worlds in virtually any way that you slice it. Are you saying that to your computer software program that these two actually read the same way?
Those two particular pieces I couldn't speak to, but yes, there are very significant mathematical relationships between things as dispersed as U2 and Mozart. Some people describe a hit song as a brain itch, and you scratch the itch by listening to that song over and over again. Mm. But after a while, you're done scratching that itch, and you want to move on to a different song. And that song, that different song, probably has different mathematical patterns. So we see that not only do we do that as individuals, we do that as a market. And of these 60 mathematical patterns, they're kind of active on a rotating basis.
Huh. All right. Is one of those patterns lyrics or not?
No. Our technology doesn't take into consideration lyrics, who the artist is, where that artist is in their career when they release a particular piece of music, all of these things that feed into whether a song is going to be a hit or not. So the information we provide is really just additional information that helps the A&R executive or the label president or the producer make better decisions.
Okay. Let me bring into the conversation now Jack Perricone, who is chairman of the songwriting department at Boston's Berklee College of Music and a songwriter himself. Jack, I mean, as a songwriter and as someone who teaches songwriting, you know, you're listening in and, you know, Mike's talking about these different component parts of songs. Is there a formula for writing hits? I mean, can you kind of break it down similar to what Mike is doing from the songwriter's perspective?
Well, I guess you could. It's not something I like to do that much. I teach song form. That's part of formula, if you'd like, but I really am more interested in expression and what the song is trying to say rather than necessarily teaching our students here at Berklee College of Music how to write a hit song. But, yeah, there are certain kinds of forms that work better, for instance, in pop songwriting. A verse chorus or a verse pre-chorus chorus song is the norm, although there are other forms that work equally as well but don't show up as frequently, like the Norah Jones, which is a kind of more or less like a verse-refrain, and then has a little bridge and goes back to a verse-refrain, which is a kind of an older form, which...
But that was a kind of an older-sounding record, even when it was brand new, wasn't it?
That's true. It had elements of newness, but it had a lot of... a lot of elements of the past, including, by the way, the hook of the song, which, if you really listen to it, is nothing more than "I believe in yesterday."
Ah, okay.
so there's no wonder that went off the meter.
Uh-huh. So it's, I mean, that's actually not too dissimilar from what Mike was just saying about, you know, U2 and Mozart and you know, the software seeing them as similar in some ways. Jack, what do you think about, you know, Platinum Blue and there are a couple of other, you know, kind of software programs that attempt to break down a hit song and identify what makes it a hit?
Well, I think they're probably very useful because most people buy songs that at least feel somewhat familiar to them, but also have a lot of or enough originality to draw them into them. So I would say 80% to 90% of something that sounds and feels comfortable to the listener. Mm-hmm. And that makes it popular. I mean, we are dealing with popular songs. We're not really dealing with classical composition.
Right. There's a lot more that we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes after we take a break. But let me just ask you both very quickly about novelty songs. I mean, Mike, can Platinum Blue predict something like a novelty song, which almost by definition breaks a lot of the rules?
You know, it has and it hasn't. It really depends on what's driving the novelty song. If it is actually the music itself, it can pick that up. If it is built around other social phenomena because it's the theme song of a blockbuster movie and for some reason, it catches on socially, then no, we can't predict that up. One of the interesting things, however, is of the genres of music that were developed over the 20th century, whether it's rock, grunge, disco, punk, the hit songs from all of those genres kept reoccurring within those same mathematical patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem that a completely new genre, at least the hit songs from that genre, could be predicted.
All right. We're speaking with Mike McCready, who's the CEO of Platinum Blue Music Intelligence, and with Jack Perricone, who's the co-founder and chair of Berklee College of Music's songwriting department and author of the book Melody in Songwriting. Where the girls calling them canine. Hey!
V.I.O.
But they tell me, hey man, start up the party.
V.I.O.
You put a woman in front and a man behind. I have a woman shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Say, my doggy is nothing if he don't have.
Well, there's a little novelty number from the Baha Men. This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org.
Just you wait and see.
Every night, the same old dream. I hate to close my eyes. I can't erase the memory, the sound of Julie's cries. She called me up late that night, she said, "Joe, don't come over. My dad and I just had a fight, and he stormed out the door. I've never seen him act this way. My God, he's going crazy. He says he's gonna make you pay for what we've done. He's got a gun, so run.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm flashing back to the early 70s. We're talking about Platinum Blue, a so-called music intelligence company based here in New York. They've developed software capable of predicting which songs will become hits, and we're speaking with their CEO, Mike McCready. But we've also been joined by Jack Perricone, who's chair of the songwriting department at Boston's Berklee College of Music. And Jack, you wrote this song, Run Joey Run, which reached the Billboard Top 5 in 1975. There was no software back then to predict whether this would be a Top 10 hit or not. How did this come together?
Oh, that's quite a story. Paul Vance, my co-writer on it, and he was a bit older than I and a lot more experienced and had about 18 platinum records on his walls when I first started writing with him. He was writer of Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini, which is still playing on advertising a yogurt company on TV. At any rate, I wrote that novelty song with Paul, and hated the song when I wrote it. I thought, I can't stand doing this kind of thing, because he had actually said, we're going to sit down and write a hit song. And he knew a lot more about it than I did at the time, even though I had been in business for
but
five
he
years.
But so he didn't have, I mean, a series of algorithms by which to judge how he was going to create the song. How did you end up with the final version of the piece?
Well, records and songs don't just get recorded. You have to go through a record company if you're a songwriter, or go through a music publishing company. With Paul, he was a producer, so we went to a record company. We went to Atlantic Records, and I played the piano and he sang the thing for Jerry Greenberg, who was president of Atlantic Records. And so he was the arbiter. He was the man who made that decision, should it or should it not be recorded. So he said, well, I sort of like it, but I'm not sure. And everybody was afraid of Paul Vance because he had so many novelty hits that they couldn't judge it. This is, I think, very similar to The Machine. The Machine wouldn't be able to, computer would not be able to judge a song like Run, Joey, Run.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, go ahead and do a rhythm section with voice, and we went into the studio and did that, and afterwards played it for him, and he said, no, I don't think so, Paul and Jack, I don't think so. So Paul said to me, Jack, you've written the score to the thing. Do you think it could work with violins, with strings and horns, with what's called sweetening in pop music? I said, yeah, I think it can, because I did hear it in my mind.
Wasn't there a story about, like, somebody's seven-year-old daughter, though,
I'll get right to the point. Yeah, we brought it back after we sweetened it to Jerry, who said, I still don't know about it, but I like it a lot better. I'll play it for my seven-year-old daughter. And she loved it.
All right.
she was the one.
Let me bring Mike McCready from Platinum Blue back into the conversation. Mike, it's been reported that, as Jack said, the traditional way of getting a hit song was you played it for the A&R guy at the record company or the president of the record company. It's been reported that most of the major record companies are now using your service, Platinum Blue, but prefer to keep quiet about it. Do you think there's a kind of maybe a natural desire not to let people know that decisions are coming out of computer software?
Well, again, I think there is a natural tendency to jump to that conclusion when you first hear about what we do, and that's probably the reason why most of the record labels that we work with do require us to, abide by strict non-disclosure agreements. But at the same time, when they themselves understand that our service really is comparable to the X-ray, in that it just shows you something that you couldn't see before, but that was there anyway. We didn't invent the fact that these songs keep conforming to the same mathematical patterns. We just have a tool that shows us this information.
Right.
So when they understand it's just showing them some information about their music that can help them make better decisions for their artists, help their artists not have to go back to flipping burgers so quickly because their first single didn't take off. If they can make a better decision about that, it's actually very good for the artists.
All right, and so instead of using someone's seven-year-old daughter, you've got kind of a database of things that have worked in the past. I wonder, Mike, how this thing could work outside of music. Should movies have certain plot lines and characters? Should a novel contain certain narrative devices and things like that? Any future applications of the software intended at the moment?
Our technology is really only good at analyzing music and sound waves and so forth, but there are companies out there looking at all sorts of rules and formulas that have constantly predicted human taste over time.
Yeah. All right. Mike McCready is the CEO of Platinum Blue Music Intelligence. Jack Perricone is author of the book Melody and Songwriting, Tools and Techniques for Writing Hit Songs. He's chair at the Berklee College of Music Songwriting Department. To the both of you, gentlemen, thanks very much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes.
All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.